revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.
Welcome to Living Solution with Dr. Elena George. Today we have one of the friends of our show. We're going to speak with Dr. Ralph LaGuardia. As usual, he has his finger on the pulse of things that we're doing every day that can affect our health and in ways that we don't even know about. And they're so subtle. And today we're going to speak about an article that he wrote about mycotoxins. And I don't think a lot of people know what that is, Dr. Ralph. I mean, they surround us, don't they?
Oh, they're everywhere. In fact, it's really unfortunately not on the radar of even most doctors. The only time I ever heard anyone worry about mycotoxins was in end-stage HIV patients, very severely compromised cancer patients whose immune systems were just rattled, ravaged. And they would, you would check for fungal infections in those patients. However, the truth is that it's, everywhere. And, but the problem is there's not one defining symptom. You know how we love in medicine to reduce things to mycotoxins, headache with a rash on, the back of your neck, some odd, it doesn't do that. I'm just saying some odd thing that you say, oh, this is mycotoxin.
Right.
But it's not there. And so, unfortunately, it's a myriad of a bunch of vague symptoms. We'll get into that later. But just for your audience so they understand, myco is Latin for fungus. And toxins. So these are fungal toxins. There's primarily, they're released by three species of mold, Aspergillus, Penicillium, and Fusarium. And they're secondary metabolites, meaning that the cell produces things it needs, messengers, proteins it needs to survive, to replicate itself, to feed itself. And those are called primary metabolites. Then there's secondary metabolites, especially in fungi, that they produce to control their surroundings. Fortuitously for us, in 1928, English scientist Alexander Fleming, he left for vacation, left his petri dish in his lab, came back and found it was colonized by a wild mold in the penicillin family. He returned, he noticed around the fungal colony, it was wide and clear. All the bacteria were dead. There was no bacteria around it. And fortunately for us, he at the time recognized this as very important. And, that's where penicillin came from. That was the first fungal mycotoxin that we used actually for good things. And so, since that time, as we know, evolution has brought us a whole bunch of, different antibiotics for different things, but the mycotoxin, the penicillin to this day, almost 100 years later, is still, very big in our armamentarium, although there's lots of resistance to it now. Now, mycotoxins, unfortunately, fungi colonize a whole bunch of different foods that we eat. And that's the primary way we get them is to ingest them. Some people get them from inhaling and other ways, but ingesting it is overwhelmingly the most common way of catching one. So things that we don't even consider as possibly dangerous, wheat, corn, sorghum, pumpkin seeds, things like that, animal feed, hay, those are all can be colonized by fungi. And, we knew that in medical school. You hear about peanuts and aflatoxin. We all thought that, that winds up causing cancer. After medical school, there wasn't, even in medical school, I don't know about you. I went overseas to Italy and we touched on it, but there was not a big push on mycotoxins. Was it for you?
No, not at all.
Yeah. They just kind of breached. It wasn't the same thing. You immunocompromised patients, you were taught. Yeah, it's the same thing everyone was talking kind of,
And I've seen it in them, in the immunocompromised patients. We used to work on the HIV floor, and those infections were florid. I mean, they just got one hit, and they were unfortunately, they didn't survive them very quickly.
Right.
I have a question about the mycotoxins and food cross-reaction. We're seeing so many food allergies that have now cropped up. I mean, peanut allergy in kids was like non-existent when I was a kid. I don't remember anybody who had that.
Ditto.
So is there some sort of cross-reaction signal with mycotoxins in these foods? Is that a trigger, do you think, for the immune system?
I personally think that most of the food allergies, and you'll notice that they develop as you age and get older. Some people have them as children, but they outgrow them. And then a lot of people seem to get them as they get older. It's been my experience that's secondary to leaky gut. So what happens is normally in the gut, it's a one cell lining, as you know, the enterocytes, and they have what's called tight junctions. They're it's kind of a yin and yang sign. They kind of fit together, a little glue in there holding them. And those tight junctions are there to prevent proteins and different proteins, fats, anything to go in between them and enter directly into the blood. Unfortunately, we're in a world that is swimming in glyphosate or Roundup. And Roundup punches holes in the lining of the gut. It was a very interesting little sidebar. I was in Florida over the weekend, and when I was in the airport in West Palm, in Palm Beach on the way back, I happened to sit at the bar next to it. It was funny. It was three doctors in a row there. We were all like, oh, you're a doctor too, right? And one of these guys worked for the NIH and was lecturing. There was some kind of allergy conference down there. So it was great. I was picking his brain a little bit. But he was on the Kool-Aid. He was really no help at all. I said to him, why is it that there's no allergies to beef? And he looked at me and he said, it just doesn't cause allergies. I said, okay.
That's not an answer.
Yeah, right. It's not an answer. So then I said to him, okay, riddle me this. Why is there such an explosion of allergies more and more every year? He said, oh, it's just coincidence. We're testing for it better. And I said, I don't know about that. I don't think it's a coincidence. I think people are suffering from more and more allergies. And, you know, I was getting nowhere with him. Mm-hmm. The only thing we agreed on was that, do you know what alpha-gal is?
Yeah.
Yeah. We talked a little bit about alpha-gal. And for the audience, alpha-gal is a syndrome caused by the Lone Star tick. And it's called a Lone Star tick because in the middle of its back, it looks like it has a star, a little white thing in the middle of its back. But anyway, it's very weird. When you get bit by the Lone Star tick, you develop an allergy and an aversion to meats, especially beef, and you just don't feel like eating it. And as people get sick from it. And that's such a strange thing because we've never seen that before. Now, there's a kicker in there because Bill Gates, in his endless effort to undermine mankind, is developing artificial meat. And he wants us to eat artificial meat, so I'm totally against. And he also has been genetically engineering ticks and stuff and doing some odd things with them. So you wonder if this is a conversion of his diabolical ways and, you know, this disease that came out of nowhere. But anyway, getting back to what we were talking about, for mycotoxins, I think that they're part of a spectrum of responses to challenges to our immune system. And, you know, depending on how healthy you are, that always determines what you get. You know, your immunity is good. You can avoid lots of things that normally would get you. Mm-hmm. If you're not, if your immunity is down and you're having problems, then, you know, you'll catch everything. For example, when the flu goes around, there is, you know, in the same household, some people get the flu and some don't. Husband and wife kissing each other, one gets sick, the other doesn't. So there is a lot of things that, a lot of variables that control whether we get any infections. And the same thing holds true for mycotoxins. Although they're very strong, usually we miss it because there's no heralding sign. There's no infection where people go, oh my God, I don't know what happened to me last week. All of a sudden I was down. it seems to be a slow, you know, very slow evolution of symptoms. And because of that, you know, a lot, it's easily missed because, and I'm sure I'm guilty of this as well. We're looking for the silver bullet, you know, one problem, one fix. And when you come across problems, you know, such various symptoms that they have, you wind up missing it. I mean, fatigue, cough, shortness of breath, fever, headache, joint pain, memory problems, dizziness, sinus infections, trouble concentrating, light sensitivity, rashes, digestive problems. I mean, that covers about 60 different illnesses you could have, you know.
It does.
All right. So they come into my office with that. No way I'm thinking mycotoxin. You know, although I should, you know, I think everyone should, but I think in our defense, it's just not on our radar for the most part. And so consequently, because we don't really know much about our patients' diets, I mean, I asked them about it, but it's very loose. Their answers aren't very reliable. You know, they all say the same thing. I eat good. And then when you delve in, you know that, oh, you're really good. I have a healthy diet. And when you delve into it, you realize they're eating tons of processed foods. They're not eating anything fresh. They're not eating any raw vegetables. They're not eating anything fermented. They're missing so many nutrients. And, standard American diet, appropriately named, it's terrible. And luckily, guys like Bobby Kennedy are trying to clean it up because it's a disaster to where it is now. And amazingly, they give the guy a hard time. He wants to take heavy metals out of baby food and they're crucifying him. I mean, who's for heavy metals baby food? Raise your hand if you're for that. I don't want to hear it.
Doesn't you know, it's, make sense.
Right, it's madness. You know, why would you not want to clean that stuff up? And, you know, there is, I think currently there's 3,500, you know, was the last count of chemicals in our food that's banned in Europe. And, you know, there's just thousands of them that we're allowing, you know, to clean up, but it's a slow process. It's not so easy to clean up the food system. You know, great.
Oh, I was just saying, I was reading an article about the fast food. Some of these chicken outlets, I won't name names, but some of their ingredients are carcinogenic and they're still in there. They know that it's not right, but they're allowed to keep the same recipe. Which doesn't make a lot of sense to me. But they'll come after raw milk with a vengeance.
Right, exactly. Crazy stuff like that. What was his name? I'm blanking on the guy's name. There was a dentist in Wisconsin who, Price, his name was Weston Price, who on his own dime in the 1930s traveled the world looking for problems with nutrition because in his practice, he astutely noted that their Americans had very poor teeth. And in addition to which, they had narrow faces and weak chins and pinched overbites and just rotten teeth. But people in the same family, so it wasn't genetics, who had grown up in another country and migrated here as an adult, in the same family, two brothers would have completely different faces. The foreigners would have broad smiles, not crowded teeth, nothing like that. And he went to every continent and studied at the time, you know, with primitive cultures and just looking at people eating traditional foods. And he found something he called X factor. He wasn't sure what it was, but it seemed to be in a lot of fermented foods that people were avoiding. They also were eating a lot of animal fat. Currently we do the stupidest things. We strip the skin off of chicken. We strip all the fat off of meat. And, you know, for the entire history of mankind, we ate animals nose to tail. We ate the entire animal, you know, and they got bone marrow and they cooked that and made broth out of it. And we didn't waste anything. But now we go to a grocery store and you get a skinless, boneless piece of chicken. And what you're doing is you're missing all the nutrients. The saturated fat is key to your health. There's no health without saturated fat. And that's what he found. It was against all the nutritional advice that American doctors were giving at the time, and still to this day, that avoid saturated fats, no butter, cheese, bad for you, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's just the opposite. All the saturated fats are great for you, I'll give you an example. The Eskimos. Eskimos, when they kill a polar bear or whatever they kill, they eat the fat first. You know, they'll feast on the fat. They'll throw the dogs the meat. They'll eat a little bit of meat, but they feast on the fat because the fat has all the vitamins. You know, for the audience's sake, I know you know this, but there's two kinds of vitamins, fat-soluble and water-soluble. Soluble means what they dissolve in. All vitamins are fat-soluble except for B and C. And B and C you can't store because they're water-soluble. You pee them out, so you have to take them every day or at least ingest them every day so you have it in food or supplement, where the other ones you can store in fat. They'll store in your fat. And so what the factor he was missing was turned out to be vitamin K2. And we now know, well, you and I know it, but a lot of people don't seem to know it, that K2, it was the thing we were missing. For decades, we shoved calcium down women's throats who are osteopenic or osteoporosis. For your audience, there's normal, then your bones start to thin, that's osteopenia, and then when it gets bad, it's osteoporosis. But what happened was we were giving it to them, and it was going to their arteries. It wasn't going to their bones or their teeth or anywhere else. And we were perplexed by this. What the hell is going on? You know? Turns out they were missing K2. K2, incredibly, moves calcium out of the arteries, so it improves, you know, atherosclerosis or hardening of the arteries and heart disease. It improves that and moves it to the bones and teeth and helps them. And, you know, that was the, I was talking to a fellow from Harvard, Mass General, actually, a few years ago. And we were talking about a case, and I said to her, I'm going to put her on high dose K2. And she said, she's not having a clotting problem. And I said, that's K1. I said, K2, you know, didn't know what it was. I was shocked. You know, here you are, you know, endocrinology fellow. You should be on the tip of your tongue. And we don't to this day. We don't give women, I give them D3 and K2 and magnesium together because they work all together. But that's frequently missed. I mean, I get comments from specialists all the time. I go, what are you doing? What are you putting on this for? You know, or they try to take them off. They go, it's useless. When they really, they don't know anything about it.
But they don't call and ask you and want to learn?
No.
That's so sad.
I know. They look down on primary care. They just assume we're like the grunts. And they're the officers, and they're going to figure out what's going on. Although, I have to say, whenever they can't figure it out, they go back and see LaGuardia. <You know? laughs> they have that luxury that you and I don't have. So I put everyone on, not everyone, but, you know, people I needed on K2. I think it's great for anyone personally, but it's, once again, it was in our diet before. We're the only society on the planet that doesn't eat fermented foods. We eat them by accident. You know, we'll have a little sauerkraut and something, mm-hmm. or some yogurt, but yeah, you know, the kimchi and all the other stuff we're missing. That's great for you. And that's why we're not getting the K2 that we need.
Can you supplement it? Is that still going to be efficient way of getting it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I supplement it with D3, K2, and magnesium. And the reason I do that is because vitamin D, which is phenomenal for you, causes calcium to be absorbed. So if you're taking vitamin D by itself without calcium, without K2, you're spiking up your calcium levels, and it has nowhere to go except your arteries. So it gets deposited in there because your body has to get rid of it, you know. And so but if you give K2 with it, that controls it direct. It's like the traffic cop for calcium. It sends the calcium to the bones and teeth where you need it away and cleans out the arteries from it. So it's a win-win across the board. I'm amazed. But that you can easily buy it online. Amazon has them together with magnesium because magnesium is needed for the activation of D3, vitamin D3. So they give them all together. And so it's good stuff. But once again, you have to take it with fat or you're not going to absorb it.
You just described a way to bypass all of these immune-suppressing, you know, activating your osteoclasts and all these other things that people do to mess with the actual physiology of bone health.
Right.
And then it's amazing. I mean, it's such a pleasure to talk with you. Anybody who has osteoporosis or osteopenia, you're telling us that it's reversible if you supplement yourself the right way.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Depending how bad it is, it takes, that depends on how long it will take. But there is one other key factor that I use in there for osteopenia and osteoporosis. I actually use it in osteoarthritis as well, is the mineral boron. Remember 20 mule team borax?
Yeah.
That's 99% pure boron. That's boron is actually great for you. In areas that have high boron levels in the soil, people, orthopedic surgeons have a hard time sawing through their bones. It makes them rock hard. So I add boron to them as well. And so that combination works phenomenally well. And I try to avoid, you know, these Prolia, you know, they work, but there's a price to pay for it. That's a synthetic chemical you're injecting into yourself, or you're taking Aldendronate or Boniva, or, you know, and there's osteonecrosis of the jaw, is, as you know, there's complications with it. And I always try to opt out for a natural food, as opposed to a synthetic vitamin or mineral. For example, people who have iron deficiency, I don't give them iron. I give them liver. And so I have them take liver capsules, which are loaded with iron, loaded with vitamin A, loaded with minerals and trace elements, and as a superfood. So I'd rather have them do that. For years, I gave them, ferrous gluconate and, other iron, artificial iron preparations. And tons of them had constipation or diarrhea or GI. You know how it is. They're very poorly tolerated, where liver is totally tolerated. It's no problem at all. So I have them get organic capsules of that and take that twice a day. You know, and always the specialists fight me. You know, no. Why aren't you giving them iron? I put it back in iron. You know, liver has iron. a little sidebar. My mother always tried to get me liver when I was a kid. But I had the only Italian mother in the world that couldn't cook. And she was, I got screwed on that deal. She would make liver without onions or anything. Fry it up in a pan. It was horrific. it's a superfood. It's great for you.
Well, on that note, let's take our first break and come back. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living in Solution. We're speaking with Dr. Ralph LaGuardia. And, you know, every time you come on, Ralph, it's just an education in how far we've moved from a medical standpoint from health. It's all synthetic. It's just about managing. There's no thought about the whole patient. Like, you're just doing one thing, expecting without thinking about the consequences and how it shifts the balance off of something else.
What medicine does, unfortunately, is reductionism. They try to reduce it to one problem, one pill. And if it works good, they'll have you on for the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. I'm a medical director of a nursing home. And when I took it over, I sat down with the pharmacist. I said, I'm taking everyone off statins. And to his credit, he was okay with it. But the cardiologist fight it. But we had a 107-year-old woman who died during COVID. But she was on a statin. What are you doing? What is the point? I mean, if you look back at the studies that statins were based on, it's a scam. It was Ansel Keys, his name was, in the 50s. And he studied 28 countries. He was a nutritionist. And in fact, K rations are named after him. He designed them for the Army. But a little sidebar. But anyway, he had studied 28 countries to see their diets. And he wanted to find a link between diets and heart disease. And 22 of them, or 21 of them, didn't fit his theory. So he threw them out. He kept 7 countries where he thought the cholesterol was high and they also had a high levels of heart disease. And that started the whole cholesterol craze. I mean, there's not a cardiologist in practice who doesn't put every patient on a statin. They never, ever think you don't need one. And it drives me out of my mind because it leads to dementia. You know, if you stop, if you limit the production of cholesterol, all the steroid hormones are made from that. Mm-hmm. All the sex hormones are made from that. And so what happens is you wind up with impotence and, you know, erectile dysfunction and all kinds of high flesh and sexual dysfunction because you're blocking a thing your body needs, and your body will make it if it doesn't have it. You know, your liver needs it. And so this starving our bodies of cholesterol is madness. A backbone for vitamin D is cholesterol. It's a super molecule for useful for 1,000 things in the body, and here we are reducing it to one bullet, one pill for the rest of your life, and you know all the side effects from it, muscle aches and fatigue. Yeah. The dementia part bothers me the most.
Well, I mean, there's an explosion of it now. So yes. Medication sounds like it's definitely a contributing factor. What about our exposure to toxins like mycotoxins? You said that I can change your person. Well, I've seen it change personalities. I had one patient who had black mold in her under her floorboards in her bedroom. And when I saw her, look, she had Parkinson's. I mean, neurologically, she couldn't even walk properly, had to quit her job. And then they moved. She got detoxed and she got her life back. But no one would think about that. Crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, and you see it a lot because there'll be like a water break in the house or some kind of leak, and it'll get in the walls or somewhere, and that just creates mold. And then they're breathing that in. And then you see, typically it'll start off with wheezing, respiratory stuff, allergies, skin rashes, and then it just progresses and progresses. And, to, as you saw, confusion, it depends. There is like 6 families of mycotoxins. And so they produce different scenarios. So a lot of things are in common with all of them. There's aflatoxins, like I said earlier, from aspergillus. There's okra toxins, and they're on different foods. Those are in cereals, coffee, dried fruit, wine. Even wine, we don't even think of wine as possibly a main source. There's fumonisins, which commonly contaminate corn. And they lead to esophageal cancer, neural tube deficits. There's trichotysines, which also produced by fusarium, that actually produces a very bizarre toxin called vomitotoxin, which, as you might guess, causes vomiting. I love when they name things directly. It makes my life easier. Then there's patulin, is another one made by penicillin, aspergillus. That's found in rotting apples and apple products. And the last one is ergot alkaloids, contaminate rye and wheat, and we were taught in medical school about that one because they would talk about ergotism when there was an outbreak of madness, complete insanity in villages and stuff because a rust mold contaminated their wheat or their corn or their rye, whatever they had, and they were hallucinating from it. They were eating it and it was producing hallucinogens. And they were tripping their butts off, not knowing where. Of course, what can you do when that happens? You got to hang a few witches. nothing cures ergot poisoning like killing a witch. That's one of them we're taught in medical school. I think most of us, there's so much stuff to teach us. And just, 4 years or 6 years in my case, because I went to a foreign school. But there, there's only so much they can cover. And so I think they gave a short shrift to this and really didn't do much for it,
Mm-hmm. So with it being in all these foods that we eat, like wine or, coffee, is there any way that, does organic change that if you get an organic brand or whatever?
Not really. Okay. It could still be contaminated by it. I'd like to say yes, but I don't think it'll make much difference if there's mold contamination on it. Now, that being said, I think that plants that are not grown organically are weaker. And so I think they're more susceptible to an infection of any type, mold or whatever it is. And so... in a way, yes. In a way, no. It's not totally. There's also a genetic predisposition to people reacting to mycotoxins. They found about 25% of people are genetically predisposed to get sick from mold exposure.
That's a lot.
Yeah. And so those I think, the canaries in the coal mine, those are ones you'll see first if there's something in an area that's exposed to a lot of people. The ones that'll get sick first are those. But there's a test called HLA-DR, and you can test for it and see if you're in that group. That causes compromission of your immune system and ultimately makes you vulnerable to mold toxicity.
So I want to take a quick break because I want to get into a different lane in terms of how do you test for it and can you do things to get it out of your system? So let's take our second break and come back. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living in Solution. We're speaking with Dr. Ralph LaGuardia. And Dr. Ralph, how can people read your Substacks?
You go to Substack.com. Substack is very cool. Substack is a uncensored writer's forum. So there's great political stuff on there. There's a ton of great medical stuff, and it's getting better all the time. There's probably 10 or 12 of us who write really good stuff on there, really in-depth stuff that just blows your mind, things that you weren't even on my radar. And, you know, I'm a functional medicine doctor. I do this all the time. And every once in a while, I'll see an article, and they go, what? I love it. My poor office manager, I'm always emailing this stuff to her, forwarding it to her, and having her print it out every day for me. She's walking in my office with 100 pages of articles. Like, thank you. And I try to get to them, but it's hard. But and sometimes I find sources for my writing in there. You know, every week I write articles on functional medicine and alternative medicine and nutrition. And it's geared for a non-medical audience. So I don't lose you in medical jargon, which, you know, you could easily do. And what's the point? They won't know what we're talking about. And so if I use any terms, I immediately in parentheses next to it write what it means. So there's no, they don't have to go looking things up, and they'll keep the flow of things. And then I realize, being the nerd I am, that sometimes I really want to get heavily into the science. And so I'll write, skip this section if you hate science, because some people just do. They don't like it. And so I just try to make it easier for them. But by the same token, I want to give it people who are interested in science. And reading those sections, I think, is important because it helps you understand where I'm going with it. But you know, some people love it. They're wonky. They like that stuff like I do. And so I'll include that in there. But every week I write articles, and it's free. I like if you pay for it, but it's free. And it's, you know, even if you pay, it's only like $6 a month. And that's four articles that, you know, takes you an hour to read each. But there's good stuff, and you can pick and choose the stuff you want. Sometimes I get into very, you know, stuff that everyday stuff, you know, fever, hydration. People don't understand, you know, they think fever is an enemy. And they immediately try to crush it, you know, where fever is your body's greatest defense against any infection. And the reason I say that is because the body, as you and I know, is the most incredible machine ever designed. And part of that design is homeostasis. You want to keep things even keel. You want to keep your body temperature around 98.6. And the infectious organisms that infect us can do so only because they live at 98.6. They can't live at 101. They can't live at 94. That's the range where they survive in. That's why they colonize us and come with us. And so what does your body do? It immediately jacks up your temperature at 101 or 102, and that cooks them alive. And what do? Take a Tylenol. Don't be uncomfortable. and all you're doing is lengthening the amount of time you're sick. So I'll get into things like that. I'll get into hydration and talking about how hydrating with just water isn't going to work. You have to use minerals. And we know that from the hospital, we never give IV water. We give IV saline.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because, you know, the best way for water to enter a cell is with minerals. And so, but people don't know that. How would they know that? The doctors aren't telling them. They don't know. And so in my article, sometimes I'll get into just what otherwise would be thought of as a mundane subject. But, you know, get into it with them, you know, in detail. And patients write me and go, you know, it means a lot because I didn't know what to do for these little things. I'm shooting myself in the foot for decades.
The little subtleties that they're not even subtleties. These are things that everybody has to know. And I hope doctors read this as well, because we as a group need to be better educated so we can help our patients.
I actually have a large number of doctors that read it.
I'm one of them, I have to say. Subscriber, proud to say it. Because I want you to do what you do, because you're a resource, and I really appreciate what you do. I want to segue back. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to get back to the diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
They're extremely hard to diagnose. like I said, there's no one test. Oh, let me run a mycotoxin test on you. You know, there's nothing like that. You know, the easy part, if we see a fungal infection, a thrush or something like that, you know, or some other skin infection, we can scrape it and put it under a microscope and see it, or send it off to a lab, you know, for histological staining and serological testing, or you can culture it. You can run fungal antigen tests, but I most of the time that I find it not very useful. So it is difficult to diagnose, and you kind of have to, I hate to say, you almost have to wing it. You have to say, well, you know, this patient has this complex number of symptoms that came out of nowhere. And the three or four things I've tried have not done anything for them. And at that point, I'll start to consider that it's a mycotic infection. You know, but that, you know, like I said, I'm sure even I miss a lot of them because common things are common. I'm looking for common things. And so for that reason, you know, most of the time it's not on my radar until something is chronic, you know, think, okay, then I'm dealing with something different here.
Is there any value at all to urine testing for the metabolites?
No, not really.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, it doesn't work that well. You could do it. Urine testing it overall is problematic because you're only getting, you know, are you shedding fungi in your urine? Unlikely. You know, I mean, they're more than likely you can even shed it in your sweat. I mean, it'll be in your urine and stuff too, but Quest isn't very, and you know, Quest is the big player. They, most of the time they don't have much as far as that goes. They have them, but I've tried them in the past and they give me a lot of useless information that I can't really narrow things down to, you know, but all is not lost if you have the infection. I mean, besides treating it with antifungals, there is other ways you could reverse it. You know, first of all, you optimize your immune system. That always helps every infection across the board. And one of the things you want to always optimize and is probably ignored most of the time is glutathione. Glutathione is the master antioxidant in your body. And so a lot of times in the past, you couldn't supplement it because it gets destroyed in your stomach. It gets broken down, so you couldn't take it orally. But there are suppositories that you can use for it now. I don't do that. Most of the time, I'll give them glycine and NAC, N-acetylcysteine. Those are the two building blocks to glutathione. And they are actually the rate-controlling steps to its production in the body, glycine especially. And so glycine is really important to have. It's very cool stuff. Actually, I'm writing a Substack on it probably in a week or two. But glycine is very cool. It's an anti-aging hormone, and amino acid, I shouldn't say hormone. And it's there for the audience. There's two kinds of amino acids, three kinds really. Essential amino acids, which means you have to get them in your diet. And there's non-essential amino acids that your body can produce from other parts. And glycine is a non-essential amino acid, meaning your body makes it. However, as you get older, as your immune system gets compromised, there's like five or six things that limit glycine production when you get older. If you have any infections, trauma, surgery, it eats up glycine. And so you wind up being deficient in your body. So supplementing with glycine, even though it's a non-essential, is very important because as they studied it, they realized that most people are deficient in it. And so, you know, they when you give that and you give NAC, those two things, N-acetylcysteine is great stuff. For my long haul COVID patients, I use what's called augmented NAC. It's from Italy. They developed it. It's great. And it clears 99% of the spike protein from the blood. And that is phenomenal. Nothing else does that. And by the same token, boost your immune system because, as you know, glutathione is the master antioxidant for your body. Mm-hmm. And so it kind of is the conductor for the symphony of your immune system, I like to call it. It kind of gets everything moving in sync and going along. And so that's super important to have. And so it's a good thing to take as a supplement anyway, just to keep your immune system jacked up. You know, I do, to boost my immune system, I use, there's a guy named Les Packer at the University of California, I think it was, who developed what's called the antioxidant cascade. And so what he realized was that vitamin C and glutathione regenerate each other. And he realized and that's on the water-soluble side. On the fat-soluble side, CoQ10 and vitamin E regenerate each other. And above both of them, both arms, the water-soluble and the fat-soluble side, is alpha-lipoic acid. And that regenerates everything. And so I take all of them. And so that kind of hacks your immune system and gets it supercharged. I mean, I'm in primary care. I get every disease that comes town is in my office within a few days, you know, coughing on me, shaking my hand. You know.
Yeah.
I blew Harford Healthcare's mind at one point when during COVID, they would give me a hard time. And they control everything in this area. And they own the hospitals, everything. But I'm associated with them. I'm not part of them. Where they asked me about COVID, we were arguing about it, and I blew their minds by telling them that I haven't had a flu vaccine in 30 years.
You know, you should have said that.
Oh, my God. Their brains melted. How can you do that? I said, I've never gotten a flu. I think I'm doing something right. And as I explained to them, it's a vitamin D deficiency. You know, and that's why it comes in the winter. You know, and that's why in the southern hemisphere, it's the opposite. It's, and at the equator, it's all year round. So it's, and you know, there was no counter argument to it. I mean, it's obvious that I wasn't getting it, so I'm doing something right. But that's all part of the immune system hack that I think you can do. The other thing you can do, which helps a lot to detoxify yourself from everything, is two things, hydration and sweating. And so, you know, people don't sweat hardly anymore because they don't exert themselves. They're in air conditioning. You know, I mean, they hardly ever sweat. They get a little underarm sweat and they panic. You know, it's drenching sweat is great for you. A sauna is fabulous for you. I don't like steam baths personally. I can't breathe in them. But saunas I like, and that purges your body because it'll lose a lot of toxins through your skin because we don't have a way to get rid of most toxins. Except through urination, like you said earlier, and sweating, that's the water-soluble ones. Mm-hmm. But the fat-soluble ones are very difficult to get rid of. And you know what gets rid of them? Believe it or not, this is going to blow your mind. I know this, Elena. This is going to get you.
Tell me.
Turpentine.
What? Okay, that blew my mind.
I knew it. We're taught that turpentine's a toxin.
Yeah.
It's not. It's turpentine was used very extensively before antibiotics. And it was used to treat a whole host of different things. I'm writing a Substack on that in a few weeks. But a whole host of different things it was used to. But one of the things it does is it's fat soluble. So it goes in and it breaks up. It doesn't break up fat. It drains toxins out of fat. And so it allows your body to purge itself of it. And so what they would do in the old days was they would take a few drops of turpentine, put it on a sugar cube, and give it to people. They would take that several times a day. No toxicity at all to it. It was very common before the 1940s. You know, if you look back, a lot of the stuff they did then was pretty cool stuff. You know, for a while, they did it was bacteriophages. You know what those are?
Yeah.
Yeah, bacteriophages. I don't know why we never pursued it. The Russians did. For your audience, bacteriophages are viruses that eat bacteria. Phage means eat. Macrophage, big eater. And so those bacteriophages are specific for each bacterial infection. So the Russians spent a long time filtering through thousands of samples and stuff to find what would kill specifically, what virus would kill what bacteria. And they have a whole panel of those. And there's no resistance. You wipe it out. There's no side effects. You're only killing that bacteria. You're not killing intestinal bacteria. You're not killing anything else. Yet we've ignored that and went in whole hog into antibiotics, which create resistance, as you know, and all kinds of, and they're getting weaker and weaker. You know, I mean, as the bacteria exchange DNA, they're learning, they're exchanging resistance genes, and they're working their way around it. Yet we keep plodding down that same road. Let's get a stronger antibiotic. Let's do combinations of antibiotics. You know, when I believe we should be embracing bacteriophages. It's so specific. You could take something like MRSA and have a bacteriophage that eats that bacteria and it would wipe it out. Yet we go crazy trying to find the right combination of antibiotics that will kill it.
Well, you would figure the infectious disease colleagues would be all over this. They don't have any literature that, I mean, we're not reading it, I'm sure, most of us.
Yeah. But there's nothing. It's amazing. The whole thing amazes me. It amazes me that oncologists right now aren't embracing fenbendazole and ivermectin.
I've been reading a lot about a lot of good studies.
Great
recovering.
Stuff.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, I've done it myself. I had a, one of the secretaries in the nursing home I run came to me and was crying and said that her daughter was just diagnosed with stage 4 breast cancer. They gave her 6 months to live. Mm-hmm. And the doctors, you know, didn't know they could help her at all. And she said, can you do anything? And I said, okay. And I put her on a whole bunch. I said, you know, it's a long shot, but I'll try. This was 2 years ago. And now she's in complete remission.
That's complete. Incredible.
They came. Sloan Kettering hates me. They said it was the stuff they gave, which wasn't working. And so I put her on, among other things, pomegranate and a whole bunch of different things that boost her immune system. But the key mm-hmm. thing was I gave her ivermectin and fenbendazole. And that's caused a lot of confusion among the lay public because they're antiparasitic. And so what they immediately, and you know, you can see them thinking that, okay, you're giving them an anti-parasite, it's curing cancer. Cancer must be a parasite.
Mm-hmm.
Wrong. It's not. It's just that they use the same metabolic pathways as the parasites. And so you're doing something that's blocking the metabolic pathway. There was a guy named Joe Tippins who started the whole thing. He was sent home to die with end-stage liver cancer, I believe, from long meds to his liver. I forget what the combination was, but he was a goner. They said a few months is all you have. And this was in the late 80s. And his best friend was a veterinarian. And he said, you know, an odd thing happened to me. Twice this has happened. He said, I had dogs with parasitic infections and cancer, and I gave them fenbendazole, which is antiparasitic, and it cured their cancer. And he went, holy shit, give me some. And so he went on high dose. It's called the Tippins protocol to this day, high dose fenbendazole. And cured himself of cancer. Within 3 months, 6 months, I couldn't find it at all. And you can go online and read about it. It's very cool. I think he's died recently, but it was like 30 years ago he lived. And so, and it wasn't from cancer. Huh. And so consequently, you know, people have had, a woman came into my office about a year and a half ago, and I was taking care of her mother, and she started crying. I said, something wrong, you know? And she said, my husband's dying of bladder cancer. And they told him, once again, the same story. You got a few months to live, you know, blah, blah, blah. So I said, have you heard of fenbendazole and ivermectin together? And she said, never heard of it. So I wrote down for her what to do. And I forgot, you know, I'm busy. I forgot all about it. And about a month ago, she came into my office and said, with her mother, and she said, can I give you a hug? And I said, I'll always take a hug. You know, you don't have to tell me why. I'm a hugger. And she said, my husband's in complete remission. And I said, did you tell the oncologist? And you know what she said? No, we're afraid. You know, and I hear that a lot. You know, or they tell them and they say, no, it's a coincidence. A spontaneous remission. It had nothing to do with that, even though you were dying before of everything, you know?
Yeah.
Now, if I was an oncologist, I would be all over this.
Thank you.
You know, right?
Like we said before, the lack of intellectual curiosity is
staggering.
It really is.
I mean, if patients are coming and telling you, why do you have the blinders on and go, no, 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 it can't be. You know, it's shame on them. You're absolutely right. And, yeah. And you know, it's the same story over and over again with different things. You know, we're on the cutting edge of stuff that you and I use is not mainstream medicine. And instead of, in the old days, they would have at least heard us out. Now they've become more and more closed-minded over time, and they just rule us out as quacks, or this is just a coincidence of stuff we give, you know, snake oil. They've called me all kinds of stuff. But,
well, you know, the system is so corporatized and structured, and
right.
It's loaded with money, and people want to keep their jobs. They want to keep their supposed status, but it's not about the patient anymore. It's about that. And I think as patients, they really have a lot more power than they give themselves credit for. And if they stop going to these people and stop going to these, you know, falling into the trap and saying, I'm going to do it my way.
Right.
Come around. Basically, it's all about the money, right? Follow the money.
Right, right. They do, you know, stuff, you know, you think they would have more compassion, you know.
That's gone.
Yeah, oh, my God. Yeah, I mean,
in healthcare.
I tell you, I'm not ashamed to say it. I get emotional with my patients. I've cried with them. I hugged them and, you know.
Yeah.
You know, we cry over bad things, we cry over good things, you know, we happy, cry with joy and cry with sadness, but, you know, and I hugged them, I kissed them, you know, I'll probably get arrested one day, but you know, it's not sexual, it's humanity.
It's empathy.
It's empathy.
Right?
I'm just being another human, reaching out to them. I always ask them, can I hug you? And, yeah. You know, I don't want to just hug someone.
The art of medicine is that, right?
Yes.
That's the, the secret sauce that helps people get better.
Right. Human touch means everything.
Exactly. You know,
patients are, I remember once when I was in my residency, this guy, Tony Pig, I call him, he's a big, big Italian guy, must be 6'2", 300 pounds, a construction worker, drops dead in a deli. He's on a deli line. He has a massive heart attack, goes down. They call an ambulance. He's at an outlying hospital. And I was at St. Vincent's in Worcester. And I was the resident at the time running a place. And they call up and then that night and said, we got a guy. I can't save him. You want him? I said, bring him down. So he shipped him to me. And he was still conscious. Mm-hmm. And he kept going into VTAC and coming out of it, coming back of it. And we had paddled him so many times. His chest was burnt. The hairs was, you know, sizzled. Mm-hmm. And he was looking around and rightly so, in absolute terror, you know, and in the middle of this code, when everyone's yelling out things and I'm yelling orders and I'm running lines into him, doing all this stuff. I look down at him and I realize he is freaking terrified. So I put my head down next to his, I said, Tony Pig, listen to me. You're going to pull through this. Don't worry. Let me worry. Well, you're going to live. And he did. And he lived and he came back and he said to me that moment, he said, I was so terrified, and everyone was ignoring him. You know, here the guy we're working on, we're treating his problem, but we're not reassuring him, we're not talking to him. And he said, I was terrified. He said, but it was the greatest thing in the world when you whispered that to me, because that gave me hope. He goes, I thought for sure I was dead. You know, and so those moments I'll always remember. And that's what the great part about being a doctor, that's the fun stuff.
Exactly. You couldn't have said it better. On that note, let's take our last break and come back. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living Solution. We're speaking with Dr. Ralph LaGuardia. You know, that really touched me because that, to me, it's those patients you'll never forget. It's what defines you as a physician and right. What keeps you going. This is why you write. I know it is why you write.
This is exactly why I write, right?
It comes out in every line that I read. I feel your attention and your magnanimous ability to help people and to give them hope. I think that's what the healthcare system is now lacking. There's no hope. You get a diagnosis, you get warehoused, you get treated, and oh, well, it didn't work. It's just so...
Yeah, it's sterile. It's inhumane. It's sterile. I just want to mention one more thing about mycotoxins. There are other things you can do. You can take modified citrus pectin, which is cool stuff. It actually binds up heavy metals, lead, cadmium, uranium, arsenic, and mercury. Mercury is key because fungus thrives on mercury, believe it or not.
Does it really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And I know that's odd. Of all things, you think it would just kill it. You know, that's how strong it is. And you can use brown seaweed alginate as well. And the same thing, it binds it up. It doesn't do the heavy metals like the modified citrus pectin, but it works, you know, it helps. And you could take kelp, that helps it. I use kelp a lot in pregnant women. I give all my pregnant patients kelp because neurological brain development, as you know, is dependent on iodine. And there's a lack of iodine in the soils and a lack of iodine in our diets. Kelp is seaweed full of iodine. It has all the essential amino acids and vitamins, and it's great stuff. And so I give them kelp, and there was a guy named Jorge, I'm trying to think of his name, Fleshus. And he was a doctor, a functional medicine doctor like myself, I think in Virginia. Great stuff online if you can find it on YouTube. But what he did in his practice was he got heavily into iodine like I am, and he gave it to all of his pregnant women. And some of them had children without it, and then he put them on it. And it was a 20-point increase in their IQs.
Ooh.
On average. Wow. That was the average. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, we all know from medical school that a lack of iodine, you become a cretin. Your brain's not developed. You don't live long. You die because it needs it. And it's the same old story like with COVID. You know, lack of vitamin D, higher mortality. Do they give vitamin D? No. Why are not, is every OB not giving iodine to their patients? They have this fear of iodine. Where the Japanese eat 20 times the iodine we eat in their diet and have no problems with it. They always think it's going to cause a problem. So I give all my pregnant women kelp.
Now, that pectin that you talked about, is that a supplement that you can
get?
Is it apple pectin or no?
That's not citrus pectin. Yeah, okay. MCP, modified citrus pectin. Yeah, you can buy all the stuff you can buy on Amazon. Unfortunately, I don't like Amazon, but we're all stuck with it. Yeah, I use it every day like a fool, and I hate it. because I'm watching it wipe out retail everywhere. The malls are closing. You know, it's just we're gonna have Amazon and nothing else. Now they're getting it. They want to do primary care. They want to do.
Watching these commercials with the AI doctor. Yeah.
Right. Right. I mean, come on. What's gonna be left? Yeah. But anyway, yeah. So you can get all that stuff, and it's outlined in the article as well. And there's other things you take. You could take chlorella, which is really good for you. It has a lot of magnesium in it. It's great for you, chlorella. Anything that's green has magnesium. I always love this because in medical school, I remember that hemoglobin, which is the oxygen carrier in the blood, has iron in the middle of it. Chlorophyll has magnesium. Otherwise, they're the exact same thing. There's no difference in the molecule except for what's in the middle of it. Isn't that cool?
That is very cool.
It's like plant blood and human blood. But anyway, chlorella is great for you. You can also use activated charcoal or bentonite clay. They'll also bind up a lot of mycotoxins, and are good for you overall.
What about broccoli sprouts?
I don't know about broccoli sprouts.
Okay. I've heard something that they're also good at detox. I mean, they are green as well, right?
Yeah. They're good for that. I just don't know about mycotoxins.
Okay.
That's what I was talking about. Yeah, they're great for you overall. But, dark green leafy vegetables are good overall. It's something you want to include, that and fermented foods in your diet. Try to get some every day. There's no doubt. Because the things we would naturally eat in an environment that wasn't modern, if we were a caveman or whatever eating, you would be eating a very varied diet of nuts and fruits and green plants and animals. And our bodies evolved for that. It's like sunshine. Every dermatologist in the world hates the sun. It's madness. I sit down almost every day near my office when it's a nice day at lunchtime because I want to get the sun. I feel like a cave dweller. But I say to dermatologists, you hate the sun. Sun causes melanoma. I said, well, only if you get burnt. I said, evidenced by the fact, I said, then riddle me this. Why do many melanomas come up in non-exposed areas? We don't know why. Like on your butt or somewhere. And why do office workers have a higher rate of melanoma than construction workers? And they look at me with this dumb look. Because it's from the burns, it's recurrent burns. They're going out, office workers going out on the weekends are getting burnt. The construction worker's out there all the time. And so his skin is acclimated to it. He's not getting burnt. He's not getting skin cancer.
It's just common sense. And if you listen, go back on your physiology, your nutrition, learn it if you never did learn it. And it can be such a resource for our patients. And we, as a group, choose not to. I don't know if it's fear, laziness, or both. I'm not sure what it is. But I feel our listeners are blessed to have you. And we could talk for hours, as usual.
I know.
But I definitely, obviously, we have to have you come back. Yeah. But I want to thank you so much for your time. This was an education, and there's so many things, even though these things exist. And I know we didn't talk about EMF, and for a minute, if we can just grab that as, is that a contributing factor to mycotoxin toxicity?
Yes. Okay. Yes, because it weakens the immune system.
Okay.
We could do a whole show on that. That's and there's a flip side to it. I mean, the magnetic spectrum is great stuff. There's near infrared. And, that's great stuff for you, using light therapy for different things. We even got one for my dog. My wife said, they got this light therapy. Get it. I said,
that is so cute.
Yeah, we strapped it onto his hip and it's helped his hip. But sunlight, once again, full spectrum sunlight is great for you. It's counterintuitive thinking it's not. How could we have ever developed? We would have died out as a species if sun killed us. I mean, for most societies are outside all the time, except for the last 50 years. Everyone was outside all the time. We, as kids, we're old enough to know we were outside till
the lights came on.
Right, dinner time. You had to go in, but we're outside all day, every day. This is the first generation, and look at their health.
Yeah, they sicker, younger, sicker people. That's what I'm seeing in my office.
Oh my God, it's horrible.
I hate to end the show, but I definitely want to have you back, Ralph, so that we can
continue to delve,
because this is a deep, deep dive, and everything you say, someone's taking something from it to help themselves. So again, thank you so much for joining me. It's absolutely
Thank you for having me.
Thank
you. One more plug to my Substack. If you go to medicalunderground.substack.com, now I am the Medical Underground. That'll bring you right to my channel.
Excellent. Thank you, Ralph, for your time.
Thank you.
And thank you, everybody, for living in the solution.
Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times. Liberty Talk FM.